on your part.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm your host, JT Ayers. All things track and field related, go to ontrackandfield.com. Just do yourself a favor. You probably have a million tabs open on your computer anyways. Just go to one of them and type in ontrackandfield.com. We are going to help you. Yes, I said we because I'm part of the company and I get to be supported by them as well as a head coach. This is the place you go to get the best of the best at a reasonable price with great customer service. And I'm not just saying that because they pay me. I'm saying that because I'm a head coach and I'm a direct recipient of all these great things that On Track and Field is doing. A global brand. They will get you the equipment for track and field related items, as well as if you're just a general runner, they have a cool new thing and it's them selling shoes. I mean, gosh, I don't know about you, but I'm tired of going to Amazon and finding all the cool shoes and none of the sizes for me. But ontrackandfield.com is a place you can go. With me right now is JP Nerburn. He is a coach, sports consultant, founder of TOC Culture Consulting, a global sports consulting business. He has over a decade of coaching experience, men and women from everywhere, from Ireland, Lithuania, American, professional, collegiate, high school, he's done it all. And his mission is to help leaders grow themselves and their teams through mentoring, coaching, and their communities. But the main reason why he's on this podcast is because he wrote a book, and him and I was actually just fanboying over it as much as I could before this podcast. The Culture System is the name of the book, a proven process for creating an extraordinary team culture. There's a lot of books out there about culture. This one is very, very good. And so he's too humble to say it. So I'll just do it. I'm 83% of the way through it. According to my Kindle, it is so good. And it is a must read. I'm saying that right now, must read for all coaches. So JP, thanks for joining me, man.
Hey, I'm really excited for this conversation, man. So I appreciate it.
I actually talked way too long about that intro, but I just couldn't help myself. But with the time we have remaining, I just want to talk to you about a few things from the book, but I want to start with one of these things that, you know, is not in the book, but it's just from your experience of your podcast. Also all the people and teams you've consulted with, some of the best team cultures you've ever been around. What separates them from everybody else?
Intentionality right off the bat. It's where, and we're not talking about like the team cultures that had that one good year and then, you know, the program's up now. The ones that are able to sustain a great culture for time, the leaders are intentional about little things, you know. So you obviously read in like books like The Culture Code with the Spurs and the way they do things there. You know, the level of intentionality that Pop will have when he hosts a dinner for his team. But with the teams that I work with, you know, these leaders are constantly investing in themselves in an intentional way. And then they're looking to invest in the relationships with their people. And just everything they do, they're saying, what can we do to maximize this impact of whatever this is? If it's a team meeting, if it's a practice, how can we fully, you know, approach this in a way that's going to give us the best growth for our culture?
Yeah. In your book, you talk about great cultures have, just like you said, high standards, strong relationships. And you use a lot of evidence to support this from guys like Popovich, John Wooden, and it's not just basketball coaches either. So what is it about some of these leaders that you've seen that what makes them great?
I think every one of those leaders, and you mentioned the Woodens and the Popoviches and, you know, the Joe Maddens of the Cubs and there's Mike Abershoff, you know, one of the greatest, you know, turnarounds in Navy naval ship history, worst ship to best ship in less than 2 years. You look at these exceptional leaders and they are first off invested in their own leadership. And then secondly, they're very relational. Right, they all have unique ways to build relationships that are authentic, and they're coming from their own. You know, they're being genuine in those relationships, that they genuinely care about those people. And the other thing is, they have really high standards, but they don't just have those standards; they communicate them. They communicate why they're important to the mission of the team, to the goals of the team, and then they clearly have a way to support those standards and enforce those. And hold people to accountable in a way that aligns with their leadership philosophy.
Is that what you're talking about when you say intentionality? I mean, be it they have it written down with their non-negotiables. John Wooden has his pyramid of success. Ted Lasso has the word believe, you know, like anything in those regards. Is that what intentionality you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, I think the intentionality is like, there's loads of people that have core values written on a t-shirt or a great slogan for the year. But how does that, those mantras, how do those principles, how do those values guide everything that you do? How do you continuously support those values within the program? How do you celebrate those when the behaviors, you know, the players are demonstrating those, the behaviors that align with those values? How do you celebrate that, you know, create language around that? And then also just how do you make sure you can call out and immediately and address it when you're not meeting those standards? So that takes a lot of intentionality and thought for sure.
So what's an example of a good culture that kind of resonates with you and you identified it? I know your book has lots of them, but what's one of the ones that comes to mind as this, that was a good culture and these are the reasons why?
I'll actually share one that's not in the book, and that is
there we go.
There you go. This one is from, you know, I started working with this coach. He's an under eights youth soccer coach. Exceptional culture, exceptional culture at his under eights program, but he's also the manager and kind of part owner of a boat covering, you know, factory out in Salt Lake City, right? So they make, you know, covers for boats. There's 25 employees there, and you go there, and first off, I mean, you just spend a minute or two with each employee and you know they love being there. And it's not because they like making boat covers. It's because they genuinely care about each other. And they also work ridiculously hard. They're all about, you know, implementing Lean, which is the Toyota production system, you know, all the very many tools to just maximize efficiency and minimize errors. And so they work really hard, but they're also really, really connected. And they're just bought in, and they have these amazing little slogans on their t-shirts, like ring the bell of excellence and work like a predator, not like a prey. They have these four core values, those principles, and they have amazing little things to reinforce those. So, you know, throughout the day, like someone may actually ring a bell when they do something exceptionally well, like they finish a big project. So you'll be hearing this bell ringing. You're hearing music blasting through there. Just, you know, they're mixing up the different musics. It's just a fun place to work. People matter is one of their values. You know, like I said, work like a predator, not like a prey. They celebrate every morning in their morning meeting, you know, around 9 or 9:15. People are being celebrated for the previous day's work when they might have embodied those core values. It's not just the heads of the company that lead that morning meeting, though. It's actually just other employees. They step up and they rotate who leads the morning meeting. So it is a player-led culture within that organization. And the amazing thing is Clint, you know, who I've worked with and coached for, you know, almost 4 years now, has, you know, he's able to take some of those same concepts of intentionality and building relationships and little things to celebrate players before and after. And he applies it to an under eights soccer practice. And I tell you what, it's incredible what he does in there as well, too.
I love that. You talk about relationships, and I've not set you up for this question, but I just can't help to think, as you're talking, the relationships that these leaders have with their team. What happened to the old coach, old school, yelling, screaming, cussing? I mean, your book has nobody that operates that way. Is that something that doesn't resonate with this generation? Is that something that you have found as this is something that is really important, that there's a mutual respect, there is a coming alongside, it is doing it together? I know you're the Navy captain, you know, is having individual meetings with every person in that entire ship. I'm just wondering, what about those coaches on the sidelines that are just throwing chairs, screaming and yelling? What's going on with those leaders nowadays?
You point back to Captain Mike Abrashoff, who, you know, when I was talking to Abrashoff, an interview that I had him on my podcast, you know, we talked about that. I'm like, man, your first 2 months on the ship, you were spending 20 to 30 minutes with every sailor, and it was 300 and something ridiculously high. It's a high number of sailors that he met with. He spent a lot of time, and that was really not the traditional approach to the Navy. And at the time, the Navy's retention rate was somewhere around 50%. And his ships was like 20%. And the cost of bringing in a new sailor every year was at least $100,000 at the time, plus. But that's not even measuring like the impact on the culture. And so, you know, I think what I love about Abrashoff and why we share his story is because he is against, I think, often the norms of the culture. You know, which is, and the military was like for so long was like be hard and demanding and just, you know, let's go in there. Let's build and let's learn about these people. Let's learn about what makes them tick. Let's actually empower them to make suggestions. I mean, he was taking their suggestions like right away and inputting them. And the cool thing is, this isn't an old school concept, because when you research and all these tools that I share in the culture system, you know, these have been shared by other organizations like Toyota. Toyota has been using like people matter and valuing people and building those relationships. All these tools that Abrashoff uses, like they're very much connected to the Toyota production system, the Toyota way. And the same thing comes down to John Wooden. I mean, we talk about John Wooden. He's a coach from the 60s and 70s. It was his peak. And yet he wasn't a yeller or a screamer. And what we see is just, yeah, you can win games and you can be successful being like that. But a lot of times it's in spite of that, and you're still not reaching the potential of impact on your people and doing it in a way that people really enjoy showing up there every day. And you know, I'm sure there's loads of people that are listening and go, they'll make an argument, well, this guy here or this guy here. And I guarantee you, when you look at the research, we want people to come in and work hard, have a good attitude, and all those things, not because they're afraid of us, but because they generally want to do that. And if we motivate through fear, if we only do that, then regardless, they'll leave our program and they're going to need that fear to drive them to continue those behaviors moving forward. So that's why we have to change our approach for sure.
So there's a thing in your book that alludes to this idea of a non-negotiable. And you're like, they need to be communicated loud and proud. They need to be very known. And how you communicate that is almost as important as what the non-negotiables are. Would you explain what a non-negotiable is and why you have found that to be so successful for really good cultures?
Yeah. So many leaders I've in my research, you know, have non-negotiables. And it is one of the first things I do when I start working with a coach is like, hey, let's set some non-negotiables. I'll tell you first off what they're not. They're not have a good attitude, work hard, and be respectful, because those things are way too broad. They're not clear enough, and they're impossible to do those things all the time. When we say a non-negotiable, we mean it's not negotiable. So it needs to be clear, it needs to be observable, and it needs to be within the person's control at all times. So things like be on time, listen, you know, competing, you know, that's even a little bit vague. It becomes tough, but no complaining, no blaming, no defending, right? No excuses. These are things that like, oh, we know it. He's complaining right now, right? Or that individual is complaining, or they're late, right? It's very, very clear. So we start from a place when we work with coaches on non-negotiables, like what really irritates you? What throws you off your game? What do you really need at your practices and your games from your players for you to be successful as a coach? And by saying be you be successful as a coach, you to have the impact and lead your team effectively. And that's the big thing about non-negotiables, is you're setting the environment for you. So for me, if I can get everybody to show up on time and to listen and not complain, I think I can run a pretty darn good practice that will actually drive competition, right? I'll put that on me, but I need people to listen. And if people start to complain or argue about stuff, like that will detract from the environment. So I have to quickly step in and bring attention to that behavior. And if they're not able to correct that behavior, then I have to come in and enforce a consequence around that. But at the end of the day, they're non-negotiable. We'll always address these three things. So every coach needs a few non-negotiables.
Tell me the Bill Walton story, because that's my favorite one, with John Wooden's non-negotiable.
Yeah, that one is, you know, there's some cool YouTube videos with him talking about it. But Walton, you know, one of John Wooden's non-negotiables was being eaten clean, which means you couldn't have this, you know, big beard or, you know, long hair. And Walton was a hippie. He's a senior going into a senior season. And Walton's the best player in the country. Like, I mean, super hype. And this is when college basketball is like almost, it's bigger than NBA, right? But people are like, oh, he's going to go to the NBA. Walton didn't care. Like, he was like total 70s hippie dude. And he shows up to practice the first day of a senior season, just won the national championship, was player of the year, dominant force. And John Wooden walks in and he's like, well, Bill, what's going on here? And like, you know, points to his hair and like touches his beard. And he's like, oh, coach, it's the new style. And Wooden's like, well, I'm sorry, but that's unacceptable. And Walton's like, well, coach, you can't tell me what to do. Like, come on, we won the national championship. I'm player of the year. You know, he's thinking like, coach should just be grateful I'm coming back. And Wooden says, you know, you're right. I don't have the right to tell you what to do, but I do decide who plays and who's on this team. And we'll miss you this year, Bill. Bill like just gets on his bike and runs down to the barber and gets it all, the hair cut off and the shaves his beard. And he like sprints back and somehow, you know, I'm sure it's a bit exaggerated, but he says he makes it back in time for practice. But either way, you know, it wasn't yelling, screaming. It was just enforcing the standard there as like, hey, this opportunity, you know, it's a privilege to be a part of this program. And we're going to hold you accountable to those standards.
Such a good story. I think you told it really well too. So in your book, you talk about athletes will follow you because they know you believe in them and care about what is important to them. And then you allude to this idea about a player improvement plan, this PIP. Would you mind walking me through what that is? Because I do have some follow-up questions because I'm going to implement that with my team this year and I want to do a good job doing it.
Yeah, of all the things in like part two or really throughout the book, this is probably the most intensive as far as time commitment. I'm just going to be honest with you, but it's also potentially the greatest impact, especially with today's athletes, because today's athletes and their parents, they want to know that you're invested in their son or daughter. That's really important. The athlete wants to know, coach cares about me. So the player improvement plan, you know, we really kind of went with this idea kind of around some of the research I came across with the Cubs. And this was big. So when Joe Maddon and Epstein took over the Cubs, Epstein's, you know, big thing was one of their principles we will value the development of every single player in this organization, every single player. And, you know the story, the Cubs go on to win the World Series, you know, 4 or 5 years into it, but what did that principle look like in action? Well, you would think that at the Major League Baseball, at that level, that they would be really transparent. They'd be giving players feedback and they'd have these documents, but that wasn't the case. In fact, at Major League Baseball at the time, you know, when a player would often get cut, it would be the first time they'd sit back and say, well, listen, you know, JT, you're not great at fielding. You're not good here. You're not doing these things. And thus, you know, we're trading you or we're cutting you from the team, right? Like, and players be like, what? So their whole thing was, why are we waiting till we get rid of someone? You know, and it's the same thing in the corporate world. You see these big companies now, sometimes they put them on a player or a performance improvement plan, a PIP, when they're underperforming. But the best companies, the companies like the Googles of the world today, they're constantly, every individual, every employee has this improvement or development plan. So with these, what the coach does is they sit down and it's more of a coaching conversation, a mentoring conversation. You're not going in there and saying, all right, JT, well, this is what our goals are for you. And this is where you need to grow. And this is what you need to do. It's like, JT, what are your goals for this season individually and for the team? Okay. That's where you want to go. Where are you currently in relation to those goals? What are your areas for growth? What do you need to, and what can you do? What are your options? What could you do to work and to close the gap from where you are today to where you want to be? And you guide them. And yeah, you can come in and offer and say, well, hey, JT, I think there's also a few other things I'd like to share with you. Just one or two observations we've had as a coaching staff. What do you think about these? And you can offer those things. But then you kind of get this menu of things they could do to close the gap and say, all right, well, what are you going to do? What are you committed to doing? And what can I do to support you in that commitment? And you document it. And it's on a piece of paper, or it's on a Google Doc. It's on your computer, and you could share that with them. You can even share it with their parents. You know, we've got, you know, different teams, like academy level teams, that's a shared doc with the player and the parent and the coach. And then every once a month, you sit down, you're having your one-on-one, you're checking with that individual, and you come back to those things. Well, what's working for you? What's not working for you? What type of changes do you need to make? So that's become a hugely impactful tool that a lot of our coaches have been using.
Yeah, you talk about this developing team chemistry. It takes time. And I mean, largely this podcast, if you're track and field has a lot of time. There's a lot of time in between reps. There's a lot of time before. It's pushed forward by a lot of individuals doing individual things, as opposed to me yelling at five guys on a basketball court or a football team of 11 to move the same way in the same, like, it's very individualistic. And so I feel like a player improvement plan, especially with those kids on your team that are the leaders and are moving by example, that's a really important, valuable thing. And so there's one kind of piece that I was confused about, and I would love you to talk into it, is when we're doing these player improvement plans, what's the difference between praise and affirmation?
And that's not just even in a player improvement plan. That's in all of our coaching. Praise focuses on the outcome or the ability. So it's JT, you know, great race, or it's JT, you're so fast, right? That's praise. And what we know about praise is it either just starts to fall on deaf ears. They just start to tune us out, or it encourages a fixed mindset, which, you know, fixed versus growth mindset. Everybody knows the difference between that, right? Like, so don't need to go down that, but like it encourages that fixed mindset instead of that encouraging that growth mindset. When we go to affirmation focuses on the behavior. It focuses on what led, you know, or even the intent. So what I mean by this is, you know, let's say you ran a great race. It's like, JT, man, all that hard work the last couple of weeks, love seeing it come together. I'm affirming the hard work in that, you know? And so it's just, it comes back to what led to that. What was the process behind that, you know? And the cool thing about affirmations is, and I share, you know, a couple of stories in there. One is Amani Williams, and, you know, NBA coach of the year in 2022. And, you can affirm individuals, and he affirms one of the players in the NBA finals in game two. The guy's really upset. He's on the bench and he's pouting. And it's like, hey man, you're upset because you really care. You know, like, I'm affirming something good within you right at that moment. Like, you're upset because you care. It's not acceptable, but I see that you care and what you're trying to do. You know, you can affirm a player when he lashes out at a teammate, you know, or he gets defensive. You can say, hey man, I understand you want to win. I get that, right? Like, so that's affirming. I'm affirming some of the intent behind that. And that goes a long way when it comes to promoting behaviors and connection.
This podcast is typically pretty short because we love to have people on their commute listen to it, and they don't pause. They just go all the way through. And now I am so irked that I can't talk to you longer. So we're going to have you come back sometime, because the things you're sharing with us, these are real things like that can be implemented now, and you don't have to have a PhD or you don't have to be a therapist or whatever. Like, this is stuff that the good coaches of the world are doing now. And you put it together in a book, The Culture System. And it's really, really good. And I'll make sure we broadcast that out as much as we can. We drop this podcast. I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. And where can we find out more about you, your book? I know you're on social media. Kind of direct us where we can go to find out more.
Yeah, head on over to tocculture.com if you want to learn more about our coaching program. There's links also to the book there. We've got a load of different resources and online courses, but you can get the book at Amazon. It's on Audible. You can listen to it as well now.
Are you reading it to me? Is that
I am. So if you don't like my voice, then I probably don't want to waste one of your credits on that one.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, myculturesystem.com to learn more about that. I'm on Twitter at JP Nerbun, NERBUN.
That's great. And then I need to make sure I I talk about ontrackandfield.com, who is the sponsor of the podcast. And I love working with them and being part of their culture and team, and as well as relaybatons.com. And as a gift, just for coming on the podcast, we're going to send JP something from relaybatons.com just as a thank you. And I'll get your address after the podcast. And we can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing for the cultures and the teams. As a dad, I can't wait for my kids to be part of a culture, hopefully like what you're describing. And I feel bad for every flag football, AYSO soccer, and club team that my son or my daughter is going to be on, because they're going to be getting this book, because I want to make sure they're being mentored rather than just being yelled at all the time. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. And then Steve, the CEO of RelayBatons.com and OnTrackAndField.com, who is no stranger to creating amazing good cultures. Take us away.
Thanks, JT, and thanks to our guest, JP Nurbin, for joining us on this week's On Track and Field podcast. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved relay batons, water bottles, and tumblers. They're the perfect Christmas gift or stocking stuffer, and great for team branding, coaches' gifts, athlete or meet awards. And by OnTrackAndField.com, the source for everything you need for a successful cross-country or track and field season. Whether you're an athlete, parent, or coach, OnTrackAndField.com has everything you need. Plus, you can save up to 15% on certain items at checkout when you use the word Track Talk. Some restrictions apply. And for all things track and field and cross-country related, follow us on our socials at OnTrack, the letter N, Field, at OnTrackAndField on Twitter and the Gram.